everybody for coming, especially since it's the last day and that it's finally really nice outside. So today I'm going to talk to you about attitudes, opinions, and understandings of PrEP among Black MSM in New York City. And so this came out of a larger project that was called Advancing PrEP for Black MSM, Community-Based Ethnography and Clinic-Based Intervention. So the goal of this project was to carry out community-based research to explore factors to better understand how Black MSM think about PrEP, how they would engage with it, how it would be integrated into their daily lives, and then to inform a randomized control trial in a community clinic in order to test two different packages for providing PrEP. So the piece that I'm going to talk about today is from the ethnographic part of the grant, which we called Your Life, Your Words, and the clinical trial is gearing up right now. So hopefully at some point soon we'll have data to report on that. I'm a postdoc. There's nothing. So someday maybe, right? So the study purpose for this sub-part of the project was to really understand sort of fundamentally the basic, you know, what people think about it, will they use it, what are their thoughts on it. And in addition to this, we've also looked at things like how gender and sexuality, both sexual positioning and masculinity, play into understandings of PrEP, how men interact in both virtual and social spaces, questions around psychosocial factors, homophobia from different, say, religious and family systems and sort of what that means for PrEP, and also meso-level policies within New York. So those are all things that we're working on as well. So these are things that I'm sure many of you already know, that some of the presenters have already talked about. As you know, MSM share a much higher burden and risk for HIV in the United States. In New York City, for example, MSM have about 140-fold increase of acquiring HIV compared to their heterosexual counterparts. And then within that category, Black MSM bear a disproportionate HIV burden. So for example, there's about a 28% prevalence of HIV among Black MSM compared to 16 among white non-Latino MSM. And as a result of this, reducing HIV-related disparities among Black MSM is a vital element of the national HIV-AIDS strategy. And so that was how we came to focus on that population for this project. And as was discussed earlier, through IPREX, PrEP was shown to be effective in reducing HIV incidence among MSM, which led the U.S. FDA to approve Truvada as a daily pill in 2012. And so, as we know, the sort of just because it's there doesn't mean people are going to use it. So we felt that it was important to really understand not just that it works, but also how people may benefit it, how it's taken up into their daily lives, whether they choose to incorporate it, and how they end up understanding it. So for the methods, we ended up following 31 men who have sex with men over the course of 3 interviews. So each interview lasted about 90 minutes. And as you can see by the table, that for the life of me, I cannot get Mac and power and PCs to talk to each other, so I apologize for that. But you can see that there was variation across age, health insurance status, and sexuality. We ended up lumping Medicaid and private insurance because they still had access to services and to a doctor, which is what we were interested in for this study. And then sexuality, how men self-identified. So you can see that there was a range of those who were out and identified as gay, those who were bisexual, and those who either were discreet or self-identified as straight, and a number were married to women. There were 17 key informant interviews, and these interviews were people who were leaders within the community, some were service providers, some from religious institutions, clinicians, people who worked at gay bars. We really wanted a range to better understand how they felt MSM in New York City, particularly we focused on Harlem, were treated, how they felt they might have PrEP in order to sort of triangulate what people said versus what other people saw. The interview topics, as you can see, were focused on engagement and care more generally, not simply around sexual health, anything from diabetes, heart disease, the interactions men had with family and romantic relationships, illness and medication in general, some around sexuality, and then we also were really interested in life goals and trajectories. What type of job did they want? What were their economic goals? What type of family, if any, did they want to have? To really sort of understand men's larger life as a whole in order to see how PrEP fit within that. And then the interviews were taped, transcribed, and uploaded into Atlas TI, and then we analyzed them both within case. So each man who we talked to over 3 interviews and then also across cases to see how variations in things like gender and sexuality may have affected want to use PrEP. And then also, in order to better understand the data that we had in the larger context, we conducted participant observation in things like parks and bars, churches, libraries. We went with men to parties, and these involved both following the men we interviewed in their daily life and also attending spaces where these men also frequented. And these interviews started in July of 2013 and ended in June of this year, so this is actually relatively recent data. So the main thing, which I think has come up in some of the other studies, is that men had never heard of PrEP, despite living in a city where it was available in multiple clinics, it's on the Medicaid formulary. So just using this as a baseline, sort of if it's not something that's on people's radar in New York, there's much less of a chance that it's going to be, aside from maybe San Francisco, something people are aware of. And also that there was a general wariness about PrEP in general and what it would mean even once we described it and asked them to have to provide some initial feedback. So I'm going to go through three different main sort of categories that influence the likelihood of PrEP use for these men. And the initial reaction was most of them was just that they didn't like taking medication in general, right? And so that a daily pill was too much commitment for sex. It just was not worth it for them to integrate into their lives. And a lot of them framed it around this sort of, you know, I don't like taking medications for a disease that I already have, so why would I take it for something that I don't have and that is something that may or may not even be something I'm at risk for? So particularly a number of the respondents actually had diabetes and heart disease, so they had a hard time even doing that. And even ones who talked about having to take a course of antibiotics for a week said they didn't even make it through a week-long course of antibiotics, which I'm sure we've all been there, right? I mean, it's hard to take a pill every day. And then the side effects, which is something that we've talked about before. And this also, the idea of taking medication and what it might mean gave rise to this notion of disinhibition, which I know that a lot of people have talked about. And you can see that this participant, that it was he was talking about himself, but also framing it in this larger community of, you know, how are people going to understand this? If you say, you know, you're protected to this percentage, is this going to mean you can go out and sleep with you with whoever you want in whatever way you want? Is it going to affect whether or not you use a condom? Is it going to affect how who you have sex with or in what way? So it really is important to continue to unpack how people are going to negotiate that once they're on PrEP. So the second main thing that we've talked about is these issues of stigma and what it means to have a pill that is also used for people who are HIV positive. And so some of the men were wary to bring a label that said Truvada home because a lot of family members, they were afraid that family members would see the pill and Google it and know that it was used for people who were positive, and so they didn't want that to happen, or sexual partners to think they were positive. But also, participants reported experiencing a large amount of stigma from their family and friends simply because they were gay. And so they didn't want to add in something else to an additional layer of that and to bring in a pill that was associated with HIV, and so that was something, too, for them, that they were worried about what it would mean and how they would have to explain that to them. And so there was that. But, you know, in contrast, there are always individuals that have differing opinions through all of this, and so we wanted to share a quote from somebody who said, you know what, it isn't a problem. This is something I would do if it would protect me. This is great. Like, why would you not be able to go have sex and be safe at the same time? So there were differing opinions, but overall, there was a large amount of wariness among the community. And one of the main things that came out of this, which we thought was interesting, is that when we would describe it, everyone was sort of like, oh, yeah, no, that's a great idea. People should definitely use this. I think it's great. I'm not going to do it, right? And so you get this discrepancy between what you can say overall for the community, and we thought that this quote was just very emblematic of sort of how people thought. And it's like, yeah, I think it's great. It's good for the whole world, the community. Go for it. It just ain't going to work for me, right? Like, I never fucking taken the pill. Like, it's just not something that they were comfortable doing. So the abstract notion of what a pill could do for a community was one thing, and what it meant for them to really integrate it into their daily lives was something completely different. So that's something that when we were trying to just think about for the clinical trial of what do you do with that sort of information and how do you really work with people to try to address this discrepancy between thinking something is good and really working for it yourself. So one of the things that we wanted to sort of bring to the forefront is, as many of you know, I mean, as we've shared, that Black MSM really are at high risk for HIV and are a key population in the U.S. National AIDS Strategy, but there's this discrepancy between that fact and men knowing about PrEP and being willing to use it. And so, as we mentioned, you know, of the men that had heard about PrEP, fewer still believed it would be actually beneficial to them as an individual. And so one of the things that we talked about is that in order for this to move forward, is there really has to be a bit of caution before rushing into this focus on biomedical prevention. And so much of HIV research as a whole right now is shifting toward the biomedical, which is important, but that has to be integrated into behavioral and structural pieces in a way that we can't just sort of walk forward with this assumption that if we build it, they will come. Because it's not true, particularly for the men that we spoke with. And I think, like anything, the other thing that this shows is that since adherence at this point, since we don't have the long-acting injectable yet, is so critical for efficacy, that men who don't like taking pills and face a lot of stigma already are really going to need a lot of support to make this adherence work. So it's not necessarily going to be as simple as writing them a prescription and saying, come back in 3 months. So there have to be a lot of these other services, which some of the other studies have discussed as well. And one of the things, too, that came up with that is that, so for at this point, the majority of people that are on PrEP are taking it either through trials or demonstration projects, which have a lot of those ancillary services built in. And so right now, that's really what we're seeing is how men deal with PrEP when they're also seeing a social worker and a clinician. And I think because HIV-negative men don't have those wraparound services that HIV-positive men tend to, we need to figure out how to create a system like that to actually help men take the pill because they're facing a lot of other challenges in their lives as well. So some of the four main takeaway points for this is that it's really important to keep exploring these factors as the science moves forward. So as many of you know, the study, there was in England and France, I think it was Ypres in France, that recently showed that PrEP seems to be efficacious for people who take it around a sex act, so just before, just after. And so, okay, how would people feel about taking a pill if they only had to take it at a certain, you know, for 48 hours, 72 hours at a time? Would that be different than every day? Or for long-acting injectables, what does that mean? So we're working with this constantly moving target to really understand how people look at this. And I think especially this came out that because we were working with black men, there was a large wariness around the medical system in general because of the history of the way experiment, like, I mean, Tuskegee came up, but there were a lot of others in general. And so the idea of being given a pill by a provider who was often a different race than you and around the lung injectable too, of you're putting something in me that I can't take back out, right? And so what does that mean when we're working with a minority population? And the other thing was addressing the issues of stigma that we talked about and that really needs to come through working with the community. I mean, clearly there is some internalized stigma and we can work at the individual level, but it has to work with these men's families and friends and also with the providers. And I think, and I know a lot of work is being done in New York, and the health department is going through and educating providers as well, because a lot of these men discussed that, you know, that even some of the providers we interviewed, you know, would use labels like promiscuous, right? And it's like, okay, if that's what they're telling us as interviewees, no wonder the men don't want to talk to them about PrEP, right, if that's the sort of feedback that they're getting. So it's really important to address this on multiple levels. And then the other issue is talking about, the potential for disinhibition, and how do we really address that and to better understand, because I think so often when we talk about disinhibition, we think, okay, if men are using PrEP, maybe they won't use condoms. But there are a lot of other ways that people negotiate risk, and it's not simply around condoms. As I mentioned earlier, you know, it's who you have sex with, it's how you have sex, it's when you have sex. So really understanding how PrEP gets integrated into the decisions people make. Fourth, it's really creating these environments for PrEP to be scaled up, because right now, as we said, it's mostly going through trials and larger demonstration projects. So what does it mean to have it fully available? I mean, in New York, it's available through the Medicaid formulary, so the majority of people can get it, but in most other states in the United States, it's really not readily available, and if it is, people have to ask for it, and asking for it means going to your provider who may or may not know who you have sex with. So it means disclosing a lot of things in order to just ask for a pill and then to try to be afraid that you're going to get pushback from a provider. So we really need to think about this and how to make it available for people, particularly if the ACA is getting scaled up, and how to make it available for people not just who can afford it, but who also simply need it. So as an acknowledgement, I want to go through and thank Dr. Jennifer Hirsch and Paul Coulson. Jennifer Hirsch is the lead PI on the ethnographic piece, and Paul Coulson is the PI on the clinical piece, the rest of the study team, and then particularly everyone who took the time to speak with us, the men in particular, and who also let us, you know, follow them and spend time with them in their daily lives, and then also the community members. And, yeah, thank you very much.